Welcome to Signal Noise Weekly. I'm your editor, and this week, a lot happened. Oil over 100, Congress in chaos, and Goldman Sachs somehow posting record numbers through all of it.
Oh, and we have a naval blockade. Just, you know, that.
Right. We have a naval blockade. Let's start there.
Because everything else flows from it, honestly.
Everything flows from it. Strategist, beframing. 36 sources on the Hormuz blockade. How are outlets playing this?
So here's the split. Center-left outlets are using the word war. Right-leaning outlets? Not so much.
Wait, they're covering an active naval blockade and not calling it a war?
They're calling it a standoff, a confrontation, a blockade situation.
A blockade situation? That's doing a lot of work.
That's incredible framing.
And look, there's an editorial logic to it. The right-leaning audience wants strength framing, not quagmire framing. So the story becomes U.S. enforces blockade rather than U.S. enters war.
Two completely different emotional registers.
And the markets don't care what you call it. Oil is over $100. That's the signal. Call it a standoff, call it a war, the price at the pump is the same.
Forecaster, we'll get to the market stuff. Stay with me on framing for a second.
Right. Sorry, go ahead.
So you've got 28 sources on the Trump as Jesus meme, which is genuinely wild, running alongside 28 sources on nuclear talks still happening during the blockade.
Those two stories are in the same news cycle?
Simultaneously. And that tells you something about editorial priority. Some outlets led with the meme. Some led with the diplomacy.
The meme got more social engagement by a lot.
Of course it did.
But here's where I think the framing story gets really interesting. Egypt and Pakistan are quietly building a peace framework. That's a significant diplomatic development. And it's getting almost no traction in U.S. coverage.
Because it doesn't have a strong visual. No drone footage, no ship photos.
Exactly. The Hormuz blockade has incredible visuals. Diplomats meeting in Cairo does not.
And the U.K. is pushing for Hormuz shipping to fully resume? Lammy's out there making noise. That's a NATO ally applying pressure. That's a real story.
Al Jazeera had the best read on it. They cited a Tufts fellow arguing Iran has effectively converted the strait into leverage.
Which is a completely different frame than Iran is losing the standoff.
Same facts, different war.
Literally.
Okay, the blind spot nobody's talking about. Strategist, this one's yours. Right-leaning outlets and the Ukraine Easter pause.
So Zelensky offers to pause energy strikes over Easter. Same day, a Russian drone kills 4 people on a bus. That's the whole story in 2 sentences.
And the right didn't cover it?
Basically absent. And I think the editorial logic is right-leaning audiences are increasingly skeptical of Ukraine coverage that portrays Zelensky favorably.
But this isn't even a favorable story. A drone killed 4 people.
Right, but the lead is Zelensky making a gesture. And that gesture reads as sympathy generating. So the outlets skip it.
That's a real blind spot. People who only read right-leaning news have no idea this happened.
And there's a French UNIFIL peacekeeper killed in Lebanon. Also a right blind spot. Also gone.
The Lebanon ceasefire story is the same pattern. Displaced Lebanese returning home. That's a hopeful frame. Right outlets aren't running hopeful Ukraine or Lebanon frames right now.
I want to push back slightly. Is it ideology or is it just the Iran war is eating all the oxygen? Like maybe it's a bandwidth issue.
That's fair. It could be both.
Could be both. It's usually both.
It's always both.
Okay, Swalwell. This one is everywhere. Forecaster, give me the coverage numbers fast.
24 sources on the resignation, 2 members of Congress out. Swalwell faces rape accusations in West Hollywood. The LADA's sex crimes division is on it. That's not nothing.
That is not nothing.
And the framing is genuinely interesting here. This is tagged under the 2026 midterms narrative, not just a scandal story. Outlets are already positioning it as an electoral liability.
Which, I mean, yeah, a congressman resigning under rape accusations is probably an electoral liability.
Sure, but the speed of that frame, how fast it became a midterm story rather than a criminal justice story, that's worth noting.
That's a good catch. And Alyssa Farah Griffin is calling for a broader reckoning. The View co-host saying this is systemic.
Which instantly makes it a culture war story for some outlets and a credibility story for others.
No shared reality, as usual.
The DA involvement is the most undercovered element. Nathan Hochman's office putting sex crimes on it, that's a significant escalation from allegation to active investigation.
And most headlines I saw buried that detail.
They buried the DA's sex crimes division?
Third paragraph. Fourth paragraph. After the resignation. After the party affiliation.
Because congressman resigns is the emotional hook. The legal machinery is harder to make feel urgent.
All right. What the money thinks. Forecaster, the floor is yours.
Okay, so Bank of America up 17% profit, 23 consecutive quarters beating EPS estimates. Goldman Sachs, record equities trading, second highest revenue quarter ever, oil over 100.
The banks are thriving during the Iran war.
Equities trading loves volatility. The more chaos, the more people trade. Goldman's equities desk is basically, they love this.
But FICC came in below expectations. Solomon acknowledged it. That's not nothing either.
Fair, fixed income missed, but the headline is record equities. And the media ran with the headline.
Which is exactly the point of this segment.
The consumer story is more complicated, though. There's a left blind spot this week. U.S.-Iran war and $4 gas weighing on consumer spending. That story is basically absent from left-leaning coverage.
Wait, $4 gas is a left blind spot?
The consumer pain story, yes. Left outlets are covering the war. They are not connecting the war to the grocery store or the gas pump in a sustained way.
Because connecting those dots potentially validates the Trump framing that it's Zelensky's fault, or Iran's fault, rather than policy failure.
I think it's simpler than that. The war narrative is more cinematic. Gas prices are boring.
Gas prices are boring until you're paying them.
Until you're paying them, exactly.
And Moynihan said consumer banking is healthy. That's a big claim during a war with oil above 100.
23 consecutive EPS beats. The bank's internal data supports that characterization. But healthy consumer banking and hurting consumers can coexist. People in pain still swipe their credit cards.
That's a really important distinction.
Debt-funded health. That's the real story nobody's writing.
And the Cerebras IPO filing lands in the middle of all this. AI chipmaker OpenAI is both a customer and holds a warrant to buy stock. That dual relationship is a massive conflict of interest story that got like two outlets.
Two outlets on OpenAI holding a warrant in its own chip supplier?
Two outlets, both center to center left. The right missed it entirely.
I'd argue that's less ideology and more... Tech finance coverage is hard and niche. That story requires understanding what a warrant is.
It's not that hard. OpenAI benefits financially if Cerebras goes public at a high valuation. OpenAI is also their biggest customer. You can write that in a tweet.
Apparently nobody did.
Apparently.
Rapid fire. Julius Malema, 5 years, sentenced in South Africa. Go.
Fired a rifle at a rally in 2018. Convicted, 2025. Sentenced this week. Appeal immediately granted. He's not going to prison yet.
And this is a right blind spot. U.S. right-leaning outlets basically ignored it.
The EFF is South Africa's third largest party. Malema is one of the most prominent opposition figures on the continent. That's not a niche story.
It's a niche story if your audience doesn't care about African politics, which, unfortunately, most American outlets assume.
Or it's a story that doesn't fit a clean left-right frame for American readers, so it gets dropped.
Both. Again, always both.
Always.
Coachella, Madonna, Sabrina Carpenter, go.
Surprise appearance. Two outlets. Neither one says what they performed together.
Neither outlet says what they performed?
Not a single lyric. Not how long she was on stage.
Madonna appeared. That's the story. She was there.
Look, that's the Wire version of celebrity coverage. Confirm the fact, move on.
Madonna, 67, last headlined Coachella in 2006. That is 20 years ago. And the story is three sentences.
I mean, was the crowd response not interesting? That seems like the story.
The crowd response is the story that nobody wrote.
The crowd response is always the story that nobody writes.
Filed under things signal/noise would cover if we covered Coachella.
We do not cover Coachella. What to watch next week? Forecaster, start.
Egypt-Pakistan peace framework. If that gets traction, if there's a meeting, a statement, any movement, that's the story that could actually end this war. Watch whether U.S. outlets even notice.
Good one. Strategist.
The Swalwell DA investigation. Once Sex Crimes Division is formally engaged, the legal timeline becomes the story, not the political one. Watch whether coverage shifts from resignation framing to criminal investigation framing.
That framing shift will tell you a lot about editorial priorities.
It always does.
Mine is the Cerebras IPO. OpenAI's financial entanglement with a company going public. That's a conflict of interest story that's going to get harder to ignore as the roadshow starts. Watch whether it breaks into mainstream coverage or stays niche.
It'll stay niche until someone prominent tweets about it.
Probably true.
That's how everything breaks now.
That's Signal Noise Weekly. Oil over 100, Goldman popping, Congress in chaos, and a naval blockade that half the country isn't calling a war. The framing is the story. It always is. At s2n.news, we'll see you next week.